15 Minutes in Defense of Democracies, the podcast, brought to you by the United States Global Initiative, a nonprofit dedicated to American global engagement and leadership. Along the way, we'll talk to decision makers, thinkers, and influencers. I'm your host, Howard Gold.
Scott Cullinane is with us today. He is a senior government relations advisor at RASM for Ukraine. RASM means together in Ukraine. It's a nonprofit organization. It's been building ties between the United States and the Ukrainian people. It's given tens of millions of dollars to the Ukrainian people and first responders. Scott was a founding executive director at the U.S.-Europe Alliance. That is a long-winded way of saying thank you for being here.
Well, thank you. It's absolutely my pleasure to be with you this afternoon.
What brought you to the cause of Ukraine?
Well, for me, much of my formative experience came on Capitol Hill and came working for the House Foreign Affairs Committee. And I began there in 2011. And this was a time when there was so much focus on the Middle East, Iraq, Afghanistan, counterterrorism issues. And I started working on the Europe portfolio. Only half jokingly say it was sort of like when you're, you know, in school and your kids are picking teams to play dodgeball and you're the last one picked. That's kind of what working on Europe issues felt like in 2010 and 2011. It was not the hot issue. It's not where things were happening. All the action was in the Middle East or in the pivot to Asia. And so I was working on this area and had part of the responsibility for this portfolio on the committee when Euromaidan happened. And then all of a sudden in Washington, you felt this return of energy and focus to Europe after, you know, the collective policy eye of Washington had been elsewhere for at least a decade, if not longer. And so through my time on Capitol Hill, it was impressed upon me how much the future of Ukraine, the struggle for democracy in Ukraine, the forces that were pushing and battling in Ukraine were the same forces that were present all around the world. This push and pull between democracy and authoritarianship, issues of disinformation, issues of hybrid warfare, things that we would come to see elsewhere were being tested out in Ukraine. And so for me, I came to feel very close emotionally for the people of Ukraine and what they were trying to do. But also with my policy hat on, it was very clear that Ukraine policy, what was happening in Ukraine 10 years ago, was not just about Ukraine. It had all of these incredibly important and interesting ramifications for the future of Europe, the future of transatlanticism, and for the future of the world, and for how the U.S. was going to operate in the 21st century, and what kind of world did we want to contribute to shaping and informing. And so for me, Ukraine became interesting both for its own sake, for the very righteous and just cause the Ukrainian people were fighting for, but also as an American, what it signaled to me about the kinds of challenges the U.S. was going to face in the years ahead.
Looking backwards to 2014, post-Donbass, post-Crimea, and also looking forward to seeing if there are lessons learned, are the things the United States should have been doing post-2014 to prepare Ukraine better militarily and, more importantly, deter Russia, if possible, from taking the steps they did in February of 2022?
The short answer is yes, absolutely. And I think there's blame to go around quite broadly on this. Part of what I think the U.S. and the Western community was hoping is that Putin, the Kremlin, did not want to go as far as we all feared. And there was an effort, a line of policy thinking that perhaps Putin didn't really have maximalist aims in Ukraine, and that with smart diplomacy and some skill and maybe some luck, we might have been able to convince Putin that there was another pathway that was more attractive than the one he ultimately went down. And people debate about how much of that was wishful thinking versus how much of that was informed, but unfortunately unsuccessful policy. I think part of this answer lies in the U.S. trying to find some sort of formulation in U.S.-Russia policy that would work. So that was part of it. Part of it was being somewhat unsure about the kind of partner we had in Ukraine. Many people, I think, then and now still don't fully understand the amount of change that has occurred in Ukraine, and a lot of belief about the Ukraine of the early or mid-1990s that did have a large deal of corruption and had many problems, that is still the Ukraine that continues to exist today. And I think probably the third element of this, at least the third, is our European allies were not willing to go further in terms of military support for Ukraine. And so there was a desire to maintain transatlantic unity, which is not an insignificant goal, but wanting to make sure whatever we do with regards to Ukraine, we did in conjunction with Berlin and with Paris and our other European allies.
Do you worry about the apparent rise in either the number or the volume of U.S. isolationists in the House and in the United States? And what happens if American firsters, in quotation marks, take the White House in 2024?
The first thing I should say is that there is bipartisan support for Ukraine. And it's really true. And there are a few very loud voices on the fringe. They're loud, but they're not numerous. And that's very important, is bipartisan support for Ukraine. And if we do get to a situation in 2024 or in a future election where we have a rise to power of a politician or a political movement that is truly isolationist, that wants to turn the U.S. away from external relations, that would be bordering on disastrous, certainly for countries like Ukraine or Israel, but also for the U.S. And here I'll just point out that the great strategic advantage the U.S. has compared to Russia or compared to China is our alliance system. And ask yourself, for Russia, what allies does Russia have? Maybe perhaps Belarus. So Voodoo is now essentially a rump state of Russia. I mean, they have no one. They have enemies, and they have those who they can coerce, and they have other anti-American forces like Iran they can align with, but they have no true allies. They have partners of convenience. And for the U.S., our alliance system, our partners in Europe and in Asia, Japan, Australia, the NATO allies, the countries who we interact with in diplomacy, in commerce, in security matters, from a place of shared interests and shared values, it's incredibly valuable because it endures across politicians. We have elections, they have elections, but our fundamental interests and values don't change. And that's really been the secret sauce of American success and American power over so many decades. And so I would certainly say to anyone, any politician of a isolationist bent, that point of view is not only incredibly dangerous for America, but it's also, I say, very much at odds with the American experience of the 20th century. And it was in times of turning away from the world when we were most in peril, both economically and security. And it was in times of our greatest security and prosperity when we embraced the world and embraced our allies and went out in a proactive way to shape the world. And, and one thing more I'll say on this is when the West does not deliver Ukraine weapons or war material in a timely way or in a sufficient way, what makes up that gap? Ukraine is going to defend its country. Ukraine will defend its civilian populations. And when Ukrainian military does not have the tools it needs, what fills the gap? And that is Ukrainian bodies. If we do not provide Ukraine with the weapons they need to win, it doesn't mean the war will end. It means more suffering, more loss, because Ukraine is determined. And I'm absolutely Ukraine will win in this war. And it's only a matter of how quickly we want to get there. Do we want to give Ukraine everything it needs to win this year and achieve victory? or are we going to drag this out over 2 or 3 years? The result will be the same. We will get to victory. It's only a question of how many Ukrainians are going to die between now and then.
This has been a jaw-dropping example of brazen military brutality that hasn't been seen on the European continent since the 1940s. The killing is the same, the maiming is the same, the violence is the same, the heartbreak is the same. The one thing that is slightly different is the speed at which news travels. Do you think it has dawned on administration officials that, fair or unfair, right or wrong, that the United States owns the consequences of a Russian victory in Ukraine?
That's correct. I mean, the consequences will be borne by us, will be borne by our European partners, and it will have ramifications around the globe. And we can just even now feel the effect on global energy flows. We can feel the effects on global supply chains around semiconductors, around food, grain shipments. That the consequences of this war ripple out around the world. And it only becomes more painful and more difficult and more negative if Russia were to win. And that's really a very dark scenario and one I don't like thinking about. And I certainly hope all Americans can understand that this is a war of Putin's choosing. But, you know, it's a fight we can't ignore, because if Russia wins, it is very bad news for the U.S.
How do you think this war ends?
I am very confident this war will end in Ukrainian victory. I hope it will be this year. I think we'll probably get to a point where either the Russian military is exhausted or the political consensus around Putin and the inner circle in the Kremlin breaks down.
Well, Scott Cullinane, I appreciate you taking the time. And in a world where the American people forget things overnight, because there are a lot of bad things that happen in this world and our memories are very, very short, but Ukraine is top of mind. And it's folks like yourself and its organizations like Razum who have kept Ukraine and the Ukrainian people at the forefront, put it in front of our elected leaders, made sure the public was aware of the needs of the Ukrainian people and first responders. And a lot of Ukraine's success is due to your organization's efforts. So thank you for doing that. And please continue to keep up this incredibly important work.
Well, thank you very much. And I'll just say all the credit goes to those Ukrainians working on the front lines and all around Ukraine. And it also, there's credit due to the American people for their generosity. And I can absolutely say I have not seen American support for Ukraine lagging or wavering. It's been more than a year, and people are still incredibly generous and caring and thoughtful about Ukraine. So thank you for the kind words, and I'll just share that for the audience.
Well, thanks so much. And let this war end, let the support continue, and let there be peace in Kyiv and throughout Ukraine. Scott, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining us for our discussion with Scott Cullinane from Razum for Ukraine. We learned about the challenges facing the Ukrainian people, why it matters to the United States, the benefits of U.S. engagement around the world, and what we can do together to advance the cause of democracy. Please contribute and follow Razum for Ukraine, R-A-Z-O-M for Ukraine.org, and follow us at US Global INIT.